Okay, reading from the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, section 3, verse 13. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Etena Bhuten Bhutendiyeshu Dharma Lakshana Vasta Parinama Vyakyataha. In this way, the change in the characteristic state and condition of objects and of the senses is explained. Let me just get this in context here. Okay, 1 second. Okay. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Jaksuram Mulutam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchakalpa Tarubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudeva Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So greetings from the sun falls, finally, and happy to be back at my place. Nice also that Gajra Purusha's association, he's up here on a break also. So this chapter is on mystic powers as yoga is the philosophical school, one of the Shaddarshans, the six philosophies of India. And basically yoga, I mean, there's a philosophical basis, mostly Sankhya. But yoga is it's a process of self-realization, dealing with psychology or how the mind works. And this process of yoga really begins to bear its fruits when the mind is extracted from the senses. Remember there, and to get to that point, the process of Ashtanga Yoga is being described, and the first five limbs were described at the end of the last chapter, which basically are progressive ways of directly engaging with the senses in the mind to increase one's concentration and become detached from the fluctuations of the mind. And in this chapter, which discusses mystic powers, somehow, although it's one contiguous subject in one sense, Ashtanga Yoga, this chapter discusses the internal practices of yoga, which is really yoga, because this is really when the mind becomes substantially transformed at the stage of meditative absorption. And we describe dharana, dhyan, and samadhi, slight differences in maturity of concentration and aloofness from the mind and the senses. Dharana is the remembrance. It may be intermittent. It may be distracted by an attachment, an object of the senses that which one has a samskara or a previous attachment for. Dharana, it becomes more concentrated with the object of your attachment as before, you're not distracted. And then finally, samadhi, where there's where one loses cognizance. He's so focused that one object of concentration is so imprinted in one's mind that one loses cognizance of basically the external world. Now, these particular internal processes of meditation, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi, it's like starting up a car. The car engine has to rev up, and then it becomes kind of steady. So these three are applied together whenever the yogi is meditating progressively. It's called samana. So we're in the section now where this process of meditative absorption, chitta vritti nirodha, this nirodha, is discussed. And what the nirodha is, disappearance of the fluctuations of the mind, is the disappearance of the outgoing samskaras. There are samskaras to tell you to enjoy, and there are samskaras that tell you not. There are samskaras that seek to bring the consciousness outward to the object of the senses, and there are some scars of attachment that restrain that. So really what this yoga is when there's a disappearance of outgoing samskaras. You can meditate yourself, or even when you do meditate, even when you care to chant japa or meditate, you can see the outgoing samskaras that are taking you away from the focus on the soul and God. You can feel it. You can actually perceive it. This whole yoga is meant to bring you to a point of discrimination. That's why the path of Gyan or philosophical analysis proceeds by vairagya, detachment, because the analysis is to clearly see and understand the difference between the purusha and the soul of the body. And vairagya is the application of that understanding. Without the application of that understanding, one can't come to higher and higher forms of clarity and discrimination, insight. The result of yoga should be insight, not just intellectual, but actually realized. One actually sees very clearly the body is different than the soul, and supports that by acting on that principle. It's very interesting. I think it even has some practical application. Now, what meditation is disappearance of outgoing samskaras and the appearance of restraining ones. what are restraining samskaras? You're chanting, you're doing your meditation, and that attachment to let me control the mind. Whenever and wherever the mind goes, let me pull it back to the object of my concentration. But so really, prakriti or matter is always moving. So when the mind becomes still, it just means that it's being restrained by these attachments were manifest in the consciousness that encourage one to do so. And the example is the struggle of a spring under the stress of a weight. So you may suppress the spring, but the potentiality for it to expand is always there. So yoga means the restraining samskaras are very strong, but the potentiality remains. And this stage of nirodha, of control of the mind, the stage of samadhi, it lasts as long as these restraining samskaras are not overcome by outgoing life. It's just like you're chanting, and then the thought comes when you're chanting. I try in the morning to sit and just sit straight and chant all the rounds at once. But we may have experience that there's an outgoing samskara that comes and says, let me get up, let me check email, let me look at this book, let me... So it'll last as long as that feeling... the sense of restraining the attachment that I want to be a yogi, I want to control my mind, it will be good for me, it's my duty, your absorption will last as long as it's not overcome by outgoing samskaras. And then two states of wandering would describe. Two states of the mind is wandering and one-pointedness. Again, I think everybody that's listening to this are meditators to one degree or another, so you can understand there's two states of mind. One when you're fixed on the holy name and one when your mind's wandering. And samadhi, which is what the subject matter is in Ashtanga Yoga, you come to the point of samadhi. Samadhi is the highest point of one-pointedness. It's one-pointedness that's held for like at least an hour and a half. There's no wandering. It's just one fixed point. And this one-pointedness, this citta vritti nirodha, is when the image that is past is the same one as present. The image that passed, Hare Krishna. It's the same as the one that is present. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. Okay, one mantra passed. What's passed is the same as Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram. Same. Same. Nothing in between. So when the mind is fixed, all it means is, because prakriti of the mind is always moving, when the mind is fixed, it means that one image is, just means that the same image, you're just bringing the same image into your mind, the same image into your mind. Now we're getting to the point of mystic powers, and that's what we're describing today. And so I'm just going to go through a few verses. So now it comes to this point of how mysticism works. I'm probably going to go on for a few more classes, and we may take a break when I go. I'm going to be going to Moscow next month or something. I'll have to see. But I do want to, I'll continue for some time, but I'm working out with Mahamuni, we're going to do some class together. Just discuss points from the Bhagavad Gita. Or the format's not set, but I may just go through, I may analyze the Bhagavad Gita in terms of psychology, how it influences the mind, and how to speak directly when we'll announce that, and how I'll do it. But I'm continuing. At least we can get in here. This is great. This is going to be the foundation of how mysticism works. It says, in this way, the change in the characteristic state and condition of objects and the senses is explained. So this changing of consciousness, thoughts, can be categorized in three ways. Basically, first you have to understand Dharma and Dharmin. Dharma is the function of an object. And Dharmin is the substratum in which it is based. Generally, it's explained like this. There's clay, and then clay is put in a cup, and then clay in a cup has a Dharma. It is for drinking. And then clay may be shaped differently in a plate, and then it's for eating. Then it has a different characteristic, which is specific and distinctive about the object. And then you make a pot, its characteristic is to hold water. So basically, Dharma means the intrinsic nature, the intrinsic characteristic of something. But it's in this way. It's the constant change under manifest reality. It's a constant change. So one of the changes is the characteristic changes. So if you have clay, and it can be a pot, then it could be a pencil holder, then it can be a... So it can have different functions. The clay at a particular point is made into pot, and then maybe a cup or a saucer. So the pot is then the Dharma that is potential clay, but the same clay can assume different things. Then there's Lakshana, because it says the underpinnings manifest in three ways. So first is Dharma, the function of something, and then Lakshana, the state of something. So the function is that now the pot, but the state of it is... It exists now, it will exist in the future, or it existed in the past. The state of the object, in other words, how it's understood in its situation of time. So again, Dharma means the characteristic of an object, Lakshana means the state or time of the object, and then the last thing is the condition of the object. For example, whether it's in the past, present, or future, it can be new pot in the past. It can be a new pot in the future, regardless of the time. So there's a characteristic of the object. There's the time of the object, past, present, or future. And there is the state of the object. It's old, it's new, whatever. So these are all changing. It's all changing. They're constant change according to its characteristics, etc. It's time, condition, constantly changing. So the point in all this is that the gunas, which underpin all reality, whether the nature of mind or pots, engage in ceaseless activity. Things are always changing from future to present to past, from old to new, from pots back into clay, then clay into cups and saucers. But the underlying material substance does not change, only its characteristics, conditions, and state change. The clay remains the underlying substance, even when transformed into the items with specific characteristics, pots, etc. So Patanjali is introducing this concept because it is essential to grasp these underlying principles in order to understand the mechanics underlying the mystic powers. For example, in other words, what's really going to be presented is that the underpinning substratum of material of existence is prakriti. And prakriti will, matter will manifest in a particular thing, and it'll manifest at a particular time, and it will manifest in a particular state. And these are all changing conditions. So mysticism entails, because everything is composed, according to the school of yoga, the same thing, of a meditative process of rearranging the substratum of matter, the dharmin, on which the substratum by which things are changing from, and by manipulating it by the process of yoga, then one can manipulate states of existence, times of existence, and the characteristics of things. So, because according to the school, all manifest material reality is simply a transformation of the underlying cause, the gunas. And all change then is simply a change of matter's characteristics, conditions, and state. So therefore, by reordering matter, one can actually make things disappear or make things change. It not just create an illusion of doing so, as in modern magic, but actually have the power to substantially change things. So it actually is a mystic power that one can make something disappear. It's just a transformation of the same substance. So once you know that everything's coming from a substance, matter, which is, according to the school, is the creator of, which is the cause of all conditions, characteristics, and states, by manipulating that matter, you can change the condition, characteristics and states of things. You can change them beyond what appears to be how the laws of nature are working when they are not changed. The substratum is that which underpins past, present, and future. Clay itself is a product of something subtler and more primordial, prakriti, and so it's everything is essentially a temporary manifestation of matter, according to this. So therefore, one thing is really not different than another thing. And one who knows the science of manipulating that prakriti can change one thing into another. going to read. This principle is essential in understanding from the contours of Sankhya metaphysics, the mechanics of the mystic powers that are to be discussed in this chapter. Each for a god, as well as advanced yogis who have mastered the techniques that will be encountered in the ensuing sutras, are believed to be able to remove what the commentators call the condition, what we may call the laws of nature that cause things to act according to what is considered to be their expected natures. So mysticism means to change how things are supposed to act under the normal conditions of nature. So people can do that because they mastered the technique of changing the conditions which cause things. Therefore, they can change things. But since everything exists in potential form in Prakriti, by manipulating or rearranging the subtle substructure of physical reality and the normal conditions that historically or naturally operate back. You know, I'm getting the inspiration that if I can finish today and explain, hopefully a little bit more clearly than I have been, if I can explain how mystic powers work, then I think I'm going to speak directly in the next few days, and we're going to go on to a different subject. So let's make this the last class on the Yoga Sutras. Anybody who wants to read the rest, they can buy the book. Okay, from the perspective of yoga metaphysics, however, there is nothing magical about such phenomena. Once the Sankhya physics underpinning reality is understood and the techniques for manipulating this reality outlined below are mastered. Specifically, as can be seen from the Sankhya chart in the introduction, all gross physical objects and manifest reality, according to this system, are manifestations of Prakriti's primary evolutes of mind, buddhi and ahankara. These are universal evolutes. They underpin the universe of all manifested things, but they also exist in individual form. Each individual living being has its own buddhi and ahankara. An individual's buddhi, according to the yoga school, is potentially universal, which can mean that it can transcend its limitations and in principle at least merge with the cosmic or universal buddhi underpinning all objects. So somehow or other, it's material. You're limited by your ahankara to a particular sphere. One, by the practice of yoga that transcends ahankara, then his buddhi, which is material, has access to all buddhi, which is material. And therefore, people could read minds, and it just gives access to, you know, unbelievable things. Just to make the class a little interesting, I know I used to have students from Nepal, and one of his father was an Ayurvedic doctor, and our Sanskrit teacher went up to visit him, and there's a swashastra, which one controls the breath, purifies the mind, and then understands the future. And it's a very, very subtle science. but this is how it's done. Thus, once the delimiting influence of the kleshas are removed by the power of sheer concentration, the yogi's mind can spill out beyond its individualized containment, reconnect with its universal potential, and consequently influence or rearrange the evolutes emerging from its macro nature as the universal mind. So it can reorganize the source or the cause of the forms in this world. It gets beyond the objects to the cause of those objects, rearranges them, and therefore can the yogi can manipulate or rearrange physical reality and the normal conditions that we accept as conventional reality. Before proceeding, Vyas takes this opportunity to contrast the metaphysics of the yoga school with the Buddhist notion of shanika vadi, momentariness. In other words, the Buddhist, there's no underlying substance. Somehow or other, that pervades these forms. There's merely a momentary appearance of the characteristics, the states and conditions. And they consider that the ultimate reality and not any consistent substratum or prakriti. And it's interesting, in the commentary, this is the argument they give against the Buddhists. How did, from this perspective, that there's no consist, like in Sankhya and yoga, you know, there's consistency, there's prakriti. And prakriti transforms into something else, and then prakriti transforms into something else, and then prakriti transforms into something else. But there's a continuity. It all comes from prakriti. In Buddhism, there's no substratum. So the argument that Vyas gives here, if objects previously seen are subsequently recognized, they must have been previously experienced. If previously experienced, there must be a constant substratum to the mind preserving the memory. Otherwise, if the mind changes every moment and therefore becomes a different entity from one moment to the next, as in Buddhism, how would it recognize something recorded by the previous and entirely different mind? If it's just all unrelated, momentary manifestations of reality with no connection to the previous, then how does one memory? How does someone have any memory? Because there's a new experience here. So what's the connection to the old experience? Unless there's some in common substratum that something experienced this, and now it's in a different experience, but what has experienced is the same, so therefore there can be memory. As the Chaspati Mistra puts it, Yajnadat does not recall something seen by Devadatta. So if there's no connection, then where's the memory? Also, where's karma? If everything's constantly changing, then an actor acts and plants a seed of karmic reaction 1 minute, not the same person the next. So why is there karma? Why am I responsible for what I do now if it's a completely different entity in the past who did that, if there's no continuity? So if personhood, along with everything else, is momentary, a different person emerges every moment. That would be Buddhism. Thus, the person receiving the karmic fruit of the action of the moment, of its fruition, would not be the same person who merited that fruit. So these are the arguments against Buddhism. And the last verse we'll do for the Yoga Sutras. The change in the sequence of characteristics is the cause of the change in transformation. So it's the same point. Are assuring that the metaphysical infrastructure is in place for correct understanding. Okay. Anyway, are there any questions? I'm going to just end here. I mean, that's about as far as I can go with the subject. It was great. I thank you all who have studied. I learned a lot myself. It's been very, very practical in my communication and outreach to know, the school of yoga. It's certainly, much of this knowledge is presented in the Gaudiya Vedanta, the Bhagavatam. And I find it very, very effective. But I think now the study of the mystic powers, I'm sure it has some relevance, but I just don't see it in this kind of medium. I think the points are too subtle to present in this kind of medium. Are there any questions or comments? Anybody like to say hello? Well, that's certainly a good sign that this should be the last class on this subject. Okay, so you'll get some word from us. Probably going to change the time. And the class. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay. Well, I don't know if people are hearing or not, but let me see. I would say that God has a way of speaking through destiny, and I think this is a way of saying that it was a nice and way to finish with like a bang, but somehow it kind of just went where it is.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Please accept my humble obeisance. You were still muted. Announcer said that you were still muted.
What's that?
The announcer just said that you were still muted.
I can't understand what you said. Say it slowly.
The announcer just said that you were still muted. Yeah, that's what she said.
So maybe how long was I muted?
Couldn't hear them.
Yeah. Maharaj Krishna, it's not that you were muted, it's that you had the settings set so that nobody could respond to you.
Okay, so okay. Anybody want to say hello now that it's unmuted? Lucky, I'm going to call you right after this, okay? We should chat. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay. Anyway, somehow it was muted, but we'll continue with something else. I mean, I've been doing this for 3.5 years. You know, there's somehow a time where it's trying to change subjects, and it's become obvious it is now. Okay, thank you all. Anybody want to read the book, you can finish it yourself. It's about mystic powers, and it has relevance, obviously. Okay, Hare Krishna.